Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Brian Spradlin, a special edition of the Baseball America podcast. I like to do things that I find interesting, and I hope a lot of other people who love baseball will find interesting. This is one of those. I could basically title this Everything You Want to Know to Make a Better or to Watch a Better Baseball Broadcast. And that is why we are talking today with Brian Spradlin. I want to kind of lay out the story of this kind of to start, which is basically how I would explain this is that I like to watch an awful lot of baseball, but especially minor league baseball, MILB TV. I've been watching MILB TV for 15 years now, however long it has been around. I've been doing that. And basically, we connected because I was watching Seth Fernandez starts on Bradenton broadcast and just blown away by the caliber, the quality of the camera angles, the sharpness of the cameras, the quality of the production, all that. Tweeted about it. Brian, who basically runs, you know, this is kind of like his work, you know, reached out just to say thanks. And then we kind of connected. And really at that point, I want to get your right title, manager game presentation and marketing
for
Florida operations for the Pirates, because it is also a spring training facility. And also it's where the, you know, you have complexly, you have everything there. But so we connected at that point and started talking about broadcast and like,
Exactly. And the, some of the things that make it, you know, more than just baseball. That was kind of the thing, my driving factor of getting into, you know, this industry. You know, how can I make it more presentable to fans? How can I engage fans more and make it fun for people at home and tell a story along with the game? And I think that's kind of me and you hit off on that on Twitter. I'm very appreciative. I actually printed out your tweet and put it on my wall here in my office. That's just kind of a running thing that I have each year, whatever tweet comes out. It just kind of, you know, inspires me to be better. This year we've done a lot of fun things, in comparison to what we have done here in the past. And it's brought our stuff to a whole new level. You know, I was just talking last night, we were on Sportsnet Pittsburgh, which is our home affiliate for the Pirates. Not a lot of minor league teams can do that.
You won't look out of place is the key thing. You're not, it's not like, wait, what am I watching? Am I watching this on 480p in a, you know, like in a phone booth or what? No, it just looks like another broadcast.
That's awesome. And, you know, I have to give credit to my IT team and some of the baseball ops teams that go in to, you know, putting the cameras and selecting the cameras. So Patricio Zuniga, our IT specialist, he works, you know, hand in hand with our baseball ops crew to find, you know, the best cameras that, you know, I don't want to say money can buy, but the best cameras that the Pirates can buy to get the best product and for their players.
And that's one of the things we want to talk about today is it's like, basically when I view this, I am a fan of minor league baseball broadcast. I am amazed by the fact that it's gone from, in my time at Baseball America, zero, where it was like the players were all going playing games, but if you weren't in the ballpark that night, you weren't being able to see it, to I can bounce around to pretty much any full season minor league game. And now, crazy enough, even some complex league games.
Absolutely.
Every night. And it's so much better. But that's what we want to talk about today is that there is there's an understanding here. Not everyone doing this. This is not something where it's like, well, I'll tell you the key is there's this $200,000 camera you can put in center field with a professional op and you'll be great. And it's like, that's not going to happen for most teams, but you can do this quality on, like, in a way, on a budget, in a way that I would say was, again, I say this somewhat as a layman, but at least I've run cameras. I've worked the board, you know, I've done direction and all that, at least in a small amount. There's the technology on this. I feel like I want to ask you, has improved while the cost has come down, where what used to be pro equipment that was at a price point that was prohibitive, the quality of those camera sensors, the quality of those, like the things they could do with those boards, that's all come down now somewhere.
Absolutely. I have a perfect example for you too. So wireless transmitter systems that, you know, we use ubiquitously throughout the league. I think back when we first started the broadcast here in Bradenton, it was around 2015, 2017, before my time. the cost for that transmitter system was around $30,000 for something that was, you know, top of the line, that, you know, you weren't going to lose feed on, you know, you weren't going to lose any quality. But there was still a higher level, you know, items to buy. Prime example is this off season. I was bent on getting a new wireless camera into our, program and to our broadcast. I wanted to have two roamers on our big nights, especially with our Sportsnet. I don't want to call it a contract, but you know, our game's coming up.
You know, you were going to be on
Sportsnet. Absolutely. And I started looking into options. Well, I'm not approved for $30,000 nowadays to spend, but I was approved for half of that for whatever I could find in that budget. So 15 grand to kind of, you know, pick and play. With that 15 grand, I was able to find the new, it was a DJI transmission system. It's called the Combo Set. Teams have been using it all over the country. Prime example, Clearwater up the road here, Nick Repper, who's in my position up there, he's the one that turned me on to it. But it was a $2,000 transmission camera system that saved me, you know, 13 grand out of pocket, that works just as good, if not better. We've captured places in our ballpark that fans had never seen before. We have a center field wall as the wall of the Marauders, people that have made it to the big leagues that fans didn't get to see on the old transmitter system because it would cut out. We're taking shots now inside of our team store, you know, with people buying hats, buying shirts, showing off our, you know, our logo. Again, that old transmitter system didn't get there. But now with a $2,000 system, we're able to touch all these, you know, storytelling parts of the ballpark for less money. And
the teams can find it. Better than you could for $30K a decade ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's changed our whole broadcast and how we do things. You know, we'll have two camera ops now roaming. We'll have one set for bringing us back in with two fans waving at the Kona bar out in right field, and the next camera ops walking our batter to the plate. And just little things like that just make the broadcast a little bit more watchable for fans at home. And, you know, those fixes and those ways to get there, like you said, are much cheaper than they were 10 years ago. And if you do the homework, you can put together a nice broadcast for under, you know, $15,000 to $20,000, in my opinion.
That's the perfect way for us to really dive into this. The big question we want to ask today, the big thing we want to talk about is what I think we've got to start with: what makes a good baseball broadcast, and then the keys to producing and directing and putting together a good baseball broadcast. So let's start though. What do you think makes a good baseball broadcast?
So it's all relative. You know, there's people all over the country that are really good at this. Prime example is the guy that's over the Mets. He does Baseball as Cinema. I love his stuff. My former assistant, Matthew Perry, actually turned me on to his work last year. Started diving in. He got famous for taking the phone shot through the phone of the batter. So we tried that, and we actually executed it pretty well. So
stealing shots is a key part of being a director.
Absolutely.
Producing homages is a key part of being a director.
So being creative in how you're showing the game, that is one way that you can make your broadcast better. Not just showing the center field camera hanging out until the pitch is thrown, and then you switch to high home and you get the play, and then you go right back to the center field camera. You know, that was kind of some of the ways I don't want to say learned how to do things when I was in a lower level, lower position, but it was things I was kind of directed towards doing. And I was like, we can do so much more. So getting into the manager position, being able to call the shots, you know, we're going to try things and we're going to push ourselves to the limit. And that's kind of what I would say to do to make the best broadcast possible. Do things that you didn't even think were possible. Like last night, we visited a local school here in Manatee County, had a couple of players go out, had our mascot go out, and we caught some video footage of the guys in the community. Coming out of the fourth inning last night, we had it planned out with our broadcaster. We rolled that B-roll footage on top of the broadcast. It looked really good, really professional, something that you would see at an MLB level. And it showed that our guys are human too. And they're out in the community making connections. Our mascot's logo is out there with a ton of kids around. It was just a good look to bring us back into the broadcast. So it shows, you know, your organization's doing things right out in the community. It shows that you care, you know, what product you're putting out, and you're telling a story for the fans at home. Like, oh, these players did this morning, and now they're on the diamond this afternoon. So capturing that storytelling ability and being creative, like, don't be afraid to do things that are out there.
The only thing I'm going to push back on, I agree. That's what you just laid out to me is the keys to taking a solid broadcast and raising the bar of it.
Mm-hmm. How do you make it?
I will start with saying, though, okay, if you are a new director, or if you are starting from scratch at a college program, or you're starting from scratch of, hey, no one here's ever done it before, I will say the key that you also hit on to me is that there is an understood language of a baseball broadcast that was the basics that you were first, like you said, when you first were being taught it, right? Which is center field, high home, maybe something else, center field, high home, you know, like that rotation. Mm-hmm. Because I will tell you right now, when I'm seeing a broadcast, especially like a lot of times a minor league broadcast, and I can tell that it's a very, what I would describe as someone who's a less experienced director, they have in their head, I think a lot of times, that repetition of that mm-hmm. gets boring to the viewer. And I would say, like, you know, okay, if you're cutting to center field camera and the pitch is halfway home, the viewer is going to find that much more distracting than if you said, hey, I'm not able to do it yet to do the switching around. And I'm going to just, like, when we get to the 5 second mark, you know, before the pitch is throwing, I'm going center field, start there and then build out from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think, like, again, when you watch this as much as, you know, more than probably than I do, like, I think that the first basic parts you have to get to are, don't add on to the language of baseball, the visual language.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if you fail to hit those basics, that's where you're going to take the viewer, to me, out of it much more so than if you do have a pretty, what I would describe as bare bones, but okay, it works kind of broadcast.
So a good way for a new director to get this kind of feel and that kind of storytelling into your broadcast is developing your shot cadence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take a lot of game shots from our wireless cameras, and we have two of them now, which helps us, you know, show a more creative pitch of the guy arm side open throwing the pitch rather than just center field. Being able to develop a shot cadence. So if you only have a center field camera, right, and you have a high home, and we had a wireless, that's what I ran my first year here. That was it. Three.
You can make that work.
You can make it work. And that, I mean, that's what we ran here last year, and we got a broadcast grade of an A. So it's very feasible to do that. So with that set up last year, we developed the cadence of, you know, wireless camera is going to cover pre-pitch and post-pitch. So anything in between live action is going to be high home. And if our wireless camera can catch a runner, you know, coming around first base, we'll take that shot.
Mm-hmm.
So our cadence we came up with was, you know, wireless camera walking our batter up. That way we could show a lower third for the graphic. Center field to cover to give our wireless camera time to reset and focus on, you know, where the ball may be hit. And then high home covers action. So we call it a hero shot. Mm-hmm. Whoever makes the play, whoever gets the base hit, whoever does whatever, that's where the wireless camera is going to end up on. So developing that cadence starts, you know, developing more and more shots, I would say, because your wireless camera might catch something that you didn't see as a producer, your TD didn't see, like, hey, this guy's celebrating the dugout now, or, you know, mm-hmm. just following and giving your guys assignments. That's my biggest key. You know, don't just follow the ball, you know, beat the ball, anticipate what's going to happen and tell your camera ops, hey, if this happens, follow this guy, or if this happens, follow that. I think developing a good shot cadence and always showing the hero, that you can't mess up there. Everybody wants to know who did what on that play.
That kind of, again, a lot of this is going to be pretty nitty gritty, but I think this is detail. So you just hit on it. Okay. What's the bare minimum? I've actually done, I wouldn't want to do it, but I've seen it done with two, right? Mm-hmm. Like the bare minimum I would say that you could possibly get away with if you just have a center, like, okay, I've seen it done with one set up behind home plate.
Mm-hmm.
And
not good.
We are back in 1950 is what I would say. Yes, like you too. Are back in the, but is it like, if you said, I'm trying to scale this up, Is three the realistic? Like, if you have three, you can do a decent broadcast, or could you get away with center field, high home, and make that work? Or is that going to be like, you're always going to be a little limited because what you're just saying, you're not going to really have cameras to chase shots while you're putting something live on air, right?
Yeah. So it depends, because I feel like you could get away with two as well, as long as your camera placement's in a good spot. So like, let's say you have a dead on center field camera that covers all your pitches, and you can get batter walk-ups and change to that when they enter that frame. I would say that I would put, you know, kind of a stabilized high home, but off to the right side. That way you're getting a lot of the right-handed batters, which is most of the hitters that we have nowadays. They're open side, and you're getting a nice clean shot of them coming out at first, but you got to be able to capture all the field from foul pole.
Can't be
to
that
foul.
There's that right field corner and you just can't see it.
So you have to be able to have a clean shot there. If that was running a two camera system, that's kind of what I would do, because there's always going to be action at first base. There's always going to be a walk. There's always going to be a run scored coming into the dugout. Because direct high home, it's great for covering in play action, but it is very hard when, you know, a run scores and you want to follow that guy to the dugout for celebrations. You might get a clip of your building in there, and nobody wants to see that. So you could get away with two, but I would say the minimum for a decent broadcast and to make your technical director's life easier, three. Even if it's a third stabilized camera. You know, we have a total of 8 cameras this year. We had only 3 last year. We had a wireless.
You can tell, like, there's that just gives you all of a sudden, you've just taken your, basically your array, your buffet of opportunities to a whole new level, right?
Absolutely. And it makes my technical director easy too, because it makes his life easier, because there's a shot set up before every pitch. So we have a stabilized center field camera. That's a Q6315 by Axis. I knew you might have to ask me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to add, because to me, okay, sorry, this leads to a little bit of sub question. To me, if you're saying, I've got a limited budget, where am I going to spend money? To me, that's the camera I'm asking you, because you know more than I do. But to me, that's the camera that if you do that well, it starts everything.
You capture a lot of attention.
And if you do it poorly, everything else falls apart.
It turns a lot of people
out there, you're going to be in trouble.
Well, that's the camera you're on. I don't want to say 50% of the time, but you're on that camera most of the time, just because of the time the ball takes to get to the plate, or pitching changes, or
and it's your toughest camera for shots, really.
Yes,
because it's further to get, you're shooting minimum, basically, where depending where it's located, almost 400 feet.
Yeah, it's minimum. You have to have it tight. That's the thing. I feel like if a center field camera, I don't want to see the center fielder. I don't want to see the second baseman. I don't want to see the whole infield. I want to see maybe the middle infielders, if you don't want to get too tight and lose camera quality. But I want to see pitches move. Like when Seth Hernandez was on the mound down here, it was amazing to watch his slider do what it does when he would throw it on our camera, because you could see it move.
Gosh,
8, 12 inches.
And that's okay, spending money on your center field camera if you're going to spend money. But the other part that I would say, again, I'm not trying to criticize, but there are a lot of broadcasts out there that where they fall down is the location of that center field camera can derail your broadcast before you ever get started, to what you just said. Like if you're in the more traditional, the old school, like to me, like, okay, so you're in left center field somewhere and you're too low. If I'm looking at the shortstop's butt every
bit. Yeah, right. Nobody wants to see that.
And not only that, but it kind of takes you out of it.
That was going to be my next point. It has to be something that's going to capture your audience attention, look clean and crisp. That is my GM's biggest thing. We got to be crisp. Looks clean, look crisp. And you don't want something that shows an empty stadium too, because you know some of these nights on a Tuesday, Sunday, you're not going to get the
tight where you're not showing. Yeah,
exactly. You want to see a tight shot that, you know, has people behind the plate, that makes the stadium look full, that makes your marketing online that easier that day. So it is key, and I would go right behind second base. Even if you have to go out there and build a platform, I saw two guys on my LinkedIn podcast feed the other day that were working for the Macon Bacon that built their own center field. They built their own platform with wood and stuff in the local hardware store. That way they could have a center field camera. If that's what it takes, that's what you got to do. I know if that's what I had to do here in Bradenton, I'd be out there with a hardware set right now, putting in screws to make sure we have a good view. But I would go right behind center field. That way it looks and mimics big league broadcasts. And go ahead. And
this is what I was going to say with the visual language. The other thing that I will say, like where you can fall down right away. And this goes back to, for all of this, like you have to be watching baseball broadcasts to understand what a baseball broadcast, you know, like you can tell when someone kind of is, again, it's a visual language, the same way that there are things going on in movies that you don't, as you're just a viewer, you don't realize what, but you know how the shot is zooming in or how the shot is pulling out or how it's framed. It's telling you things every time you see that. If you have a camera set up in right center field, you're breaking my brain. I just want to start. I just want to be honest with you right now. I will not watch your broadcast regularly because I will check in on it, but my brain is conditioned. I can have a camera. I can be looking at the shortstop's butt because every baseball broadcast growing up, every baseball broadcast I saw for years, every single one of them, very few of them until we had that raised camera angle of straight center, which I think is better. But every one of them was, okay, we're a little bit over here to the right, you know, of center field, if you're looking from the camera angle. And so your brain is conditioned for that. Your brain is prepared for that. It sounds stupid, but moving that camera 20 feet over to the left of center field is something that comes across as, it would be like watching a basketball broadcast. And it's like,
stupid. Not the whole court shot, but
but you're at an angle. It'd be like, well, I'm not used to watching this as an angle. And this is not, this is not an advancement. It's one of those things. It's a little bit of a detour. It's an off-road is what I would say. And that straight center field, though, like you said, it allows you to see a level of detail every pitch that you're not able to see. Even if you just go with the traditional one of, okay, I'm not there. I'm 30 feet over to the right of there. It's going to be good, but it's not going to be the same.
It's not giving you the same. And I think it helps. So in your career, right, you watch a ton of baseball. You need to see prospects. You need to see what pitches do. You need to be able to report on it. So I think having that dead-on center field camera, you know, helps us get an audience like yourself, helps us get the scouts, helps us get the player baseball upside. But
the families too. Like if I'm a family member, I understand what's going on. If I'm watching, not just the pitcher, but if I'm watching, because again, a lot of these are family members watching. If I'm watching my kid, I'm watching, you know, my buddy or whatever, and I'm seeing what that pitcher's doing, then that when I'm talking to them the next time about that game, I have a better understanding of what that changeup looked like, what that slider looked like because of that angle.
Or, you know, if he wasn't feeling it that night, you know, our camera's close enough, tight enough to where you can see pitcher emotions. You can see hitter emotions even too through our center field camera. It's really good. But that, like I said, having that aspect helps capture people that take the game, you know, to the next level and report on it and love the game. And just your casual viewer too, and engages them and makes them, oh, that's a better look than being in right center field.
Okay. So you said you've got up to 8. So we're going to move on from cameras real soon, but okay. I would say as we're building out here, the basics, you got to have a good center field camera in a good location. You got to have a high home, ideally a little bit to the right of home plate. But if you have to go behind, you can also make that work.
Absolutely.
Your third camera would be that roamer that gives you the ability in between inning promotions, you can get color of the game, fans, you can get aspects of the game. It gives you that ability and get by also getting aspects of the on-field action and gives you that flexibility. Okay, take me through I'm giving you now a fourth camera. Where do you probably put camera number 4?
So I like graphics in my broadcast because I think that helps bring it to life, brings it to a new level. If I'm having an option for a fourth camera, I'm picking either a stabilized camera that doesn't have a operator on it or another wireless camera. And I want them stationed to where every time I'm getting a batter walk up. So every time I can show a lower third of who the hitter is with a name. And even if it's a tight shot, you can cut to that in an at bat. You can get a player's eyes trying to read a pitch, whatever it be. That's what I would go with.
So that floater though, is that a, cause you're saying with the walk up, mm-hmm. okay, we have nets now that surround the entire bowl. How does that play into what you're trying to set up here?
So our cameras, we run, I have them right here. We run Sony PXW Z200s for our wireless cameras. They're a bigger camera on the shoulder. They're only around 1500 on B&H. So they're not a bad investment.
Right. And that's not like, yeah, I mean, that's that same camera 20 years ago would have run you the entire budget that you're running.
$8,000, $10,000. But we run those, they're clean, they're crisp, and they actually are, their focus is actually able to kind of blur out the net and how we focus them. So, my camera ops sit in the stadium bowl, bounce around seat to seat, change their view ups, especially with like runners in scoring position, this guy will bounce to here just in case this guy scores. So having a camera that's able to focus through that netting, it helps you 10x because then you're on the field. Basically nobody sees the net, nobody notices the net, and it's a clean, crisp shot. So having that either a fourth roamer or something to show batters walking up or the plate all the time, that's what I would go with.
When do you get into that camera angle of that shot from basically the photo well in the dugout? Is that like camera six, camera seven? Or and I say this partly because if you only get one of those, like you just laid out, like you can't get all the batters walking up from one of those. You'd have to have two to make that your primary walk up camera.
So we have two of them. We're lucky. It was kind of taboo throughout minor league baseball. And I promise you can, if you get some bad feedback, you can come back to me, but go to your baseball ops. So those two cameras were originally for baseball ops only, just to see swing paths and take pitches, stuff like that. And all they are IP cameras. And I know most ballparks across the country, every team's invested in, you know, player develop.
Every team has a quality camera that is shooting basically opens of each.
Both sides.
Yep.
I would go to, if I was a TD, and this is what I did here in Bradenton, I went to my baseball operations with my IT director. I said, hey, will this affect anything you guys do if I just take these shots for 2 to 3 seconds a batter? Every now and then we might take a swinging shot, but it's not going to be every pitch. And they had no problem with it. They were totally fine with it. So
just picked up cameras that you don't even have to.
And you didn't spend money on out of your TV budget. You reallocated and you're using baseball operations budget, which is probably what the most important thing is here for in the minor leagues, developing players. So, you know, having that camera all over a ballpark, I know every ballpark does, just go to your baseball operations guy and say, hey, what's the IP address? This won't affect anything that you're doing. It won't leak out anywhere. I mean, it's just a camera angle that we use on every broadcast anyways. And by the way,
those are the same people who are going to be watching the broadcast too.
Yeah.
And so like now that like it's a useful, cause it is a useful camera, not as a primary camera, but as that extra layer of, you're adding another layer of color to the.
Yeah, absolutely. Storytelling that every time now we have, we build them all out. We did custom graphics. I know a lot of teams use like the Bally live graphics, which look great. I love them.
That was gonna be my next question. So let's talk graphics. I think this is the part that also can be very difficult for teams. There is a manpower component to this.
That part. I only have a full-time broadcaster and a seasonal assistant and myself. And that's us three run kind of the game presentation side of things here in Bradenton. Like we are a low A team. We don't have the biggest front office staff. So we have to figure out ways and timings and to do things. So this off season, it was my mission to, I went to the MILB summit last year in Indianapolis, listened to the Bally Live gentlemen talk about all the graphics packages, and they looked amazing. And the teams that use them, like Frisco, I know Indianapolis uses them. it looks great and it takes your broadcast to a whole new level. But I don't have the system because our system was bought in 2017. It only shoots to 720p and those Bally graphics are at 1080. So I had to find a workaround that I could use. So I just started digging through Adobe Audition templates for lower thirds that were made for like corporate businesses kind of thing. And I finally found one that was similar to a sports look. And then I just dove in and broke it up and made it all our colors, threw a logo in there, built it out with our fonts. And now it looks like an ESPN level type lower third that we run for every batter. I built those all out during the off season. So that was like an off season project of mine. Tailored them to all 9 teams in our league. So whoever visit us, we can plug the visitors' names into.
They got their colors. That's all easy to, hex. It's a put in the hex color code and you're good.
Absolutely. So like, it's all about prep with the graphics because it is a lot and it does take your broadcast to a whole new level. There are things that I wish we could do more if we had a bigger team. Like I would love to show a standings graphic every night and maybe a home run leader or an average leader graphic every night. But it's me and one other guy that works on graphics here in Bradenton. So we have to make it. Go ahead.
To me, again, this is what you just laid out there to me is the key of taking a solid broadcast and taking it to that next level. I'll go back to again. To me, the key between a below average broadcast and an average, I will say that I see teams with their score bug that both are doing not enough and trying to do too much at the same time, right? Which is, it's great if you can include pitches in there, number of pitches. It's great if you want to include like a little bit of information further. But if you start with, I can tell you, clear and legible and understandable, there's a runner on first, there's no one on, there's two outs, there's one out, here's the count. If you can do those things, and especially I would say that the step that takes you even slightly beyond that is it's a minor league. These are minor league broadcasts. Or again, when we're talking about college broadcasts too, right? This isn't major leagues. Even in the major leagues, they put the names of the pitcher and the batter out there at all times. But if I'm watching Shohei Ohtani in the batter's box, I probably know it's Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
I watch a ton of minor league baseball. I could probably rattle off for you, 100 plus players in every organization. But I promise you this, a batter walks up to the, or I flip over, I'm flipping over and I see that it's number 18, batting right-handed or whatever. I don't know right away. Oh, that's obviously so-and-so. And if I can look up there and see the pitcher so-and-so, the batter so-and-so, again, as a fan, and I think even for like, just if you're watching the whole game, even like where you get into the rhythm of, okay, I know where I am in the lineup now. I know where, okay, that's the shortstop. Oh, that's the big prospect for them that I want to, really bear in on. That little piece of information, like going to like, hey, if you can add in that you've got tied in, go back to what you talked about the cameras. If you can tie into the Hawkeye feed and you can tell me pitch velocity on every pitch, woohoo, we've now reached another level. If you can use that like of, hey, that home run was 112 off the bat and it went 415 feet, great. You've just added another layer of telling the story in a useful way. But if you just get to that point of because there are a few, again, I think it's partly a resolution thing. The smaller, the less resolution that you're tech will let you do that graphic in, the worse it's going to be. But like, if you have a clean graphic and you just provide the basics of here's how many outs there are, here's who's on the bases, ideally here's the count, and here's the pitcher and the batter, to me that gets you to like an acceptable level. Is that, would you agree? Or do you
think? Because I agree, because you want to know what's going on in the game. And you also want to, give these guys their due. I mean, these guys are professional baseball players, right? Like, not everybody gets to say that. Even, I know, like, it's some crazy stat, however many minor leaguers, don't make it to the big leagues. But they're still professional baseball players, right? There's still people looking up to these guys.
They're still the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of the 1%.
Absolutely. They're that big fish from that small pond out in Montana that everybody wants to see that kid. So I think you have to have these broadcast or these graphics, because you have to show these guys' names. Because like you said, there's so many of them every night that you don't know who's playing some nights, especially with roster changes at the levels that we're at. You know, we have guys bounce up to Greensboro all the time and bounce right back down. We have guys that bounce from Bradenton to the FCL Complex League all the time. So we combated that by making a broadcast template for our lower third batter names with three information dates. It was how they were acquired, so either draft or free agent or international signing. So that's, it doesn't change. That's something that is very
static.
Yeah. And people,
once you have it in there once, you're good.
Exactly. Their birthday, say how old the guy is. Everybody wants to know that age when they're in minor league baseball. It's an important thing. And then basically where they're from. So if it's a different country, we'll put, you know, the Dominican Republic, or if it's here in the United States, we'll try to throw what state they're from. Just to kind of give them that at home feel and the people at home, you know, a little props to their person. And those are three things that don't ever change. So once you make that graphic for that guy, it can stay the same all year long. And then you don't have to worry about making another graphic.
And as much as I love having stats up there, like, it's great, but that's where I like fully understand when I'm watching a minor league broadcast, like, this goes into the next thing of, it's like, how many people does it take? You have, like, I don't think, one thing I think that the average viewer does not understand is that question of how many people does it take. I would say that for a lot of productions in the minors and college and all that, it's better ask, how many do we have tonight, right? Because you can always use, if you have 10, great, you have 10 tonight. But how many does it take? Because, like, again, what you just talked about there, if you can have someone who's updating graphics before the game and can put in what their current slash line is, or their ERA, their win-loss record, their strikeout rate, whatever, great, wonderful. You've added another layer. Mm-hmm. But you're okay if you don't. Like, there's a full understanding. Like, the same way, like, when I try to do, and at some point I'm going to do another MILB TV ratings, I always pick Friday and Saturday games. I want to let teams be doing their broadcast at its best.
And
I kind of know, a lot of broadcasts do not have as many people working them on a Tuesday as they do on a Friday. Is that?
Yeah, fair? So that's how I, you know, that's how I do things on. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Sundays, we only run one wireless camera, one high home, and then we kind of heavily rely on our stabilized cameras. So that, one, helps us save money for a single A, low A team here in Florida State League. And two, it, you know, gives my team a break if they don't want to work six games in a row in the Florida heat. And the staffing, man, that's a hard question, because 2 years ago, I ran this thing I was an assistant here, and we only had three camera ops for the whole year, myself as a technical director and two other employees that would help out with, like, show control and replay. So maybe five total this year. I mean, I'm looking at my board here now. I have, I think, 18 total people on my staff. That way, you know, if there's a call out, somebody can pick up, or if there's somebody that isn't comfortable on this machine, I can bring in this person who's running it all the time. They can teach while I'm still working and running the show here. I would say you want to put together a good group of about 8 to 10 operators, right? That can kind of do it all. Anybody that I hire here in Bradenton, I make them learn all aspects that I may ask you to do that night. I mean, last week alone, I had a guy, his name's Garrett, love the kid. He worked on the scoreboard machine one night. He worked on the show control machine, actually controlling the video board the next night. He was on a camera the following night, and then he was back in the booth on the scoreboard operating machine the next night. So being able to get a good group of about, you know, 8 to 10, and being able to train them on everything would make your life so much easier.
Have to have kind of these emergency plans. Like, I've been part of a broadcast before with a lockdown center field camera, because, again, while it can move, if you can get that shot, like the tight shot that gives me the battery, okay, I can you can operate with that. You got to, you know, but you, like, there are nights I feel like all around minor league baseball where it's like, okay, we're going to somehow make it work. We're two people below what we really need to have tonight, right? Or three.
I've done it plenty of times, especially last year when I was in my first role here, or first year in a manager, not scheduling a certain position. I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot. I have to go jump on this machine, stuff like that. I mean, it happens. You want to have on a basic night when we're without, like, not a non-promo night.
No bells and whistles night.
No bells and whistles. We have one music operator that controls, you know, our in-house and broadcast mm-hmm. volumes. We have a PA announcer. One show control machine operator, one replay operator, and one technical director. So that's five and a broadcaster. So six, and we run one wireless camera, seven, and then one high home operator. So eight total people is what I'm running on a basic, you know, night to put on our show here in Bradenton. That's not counting the required positions like pitch clock operator, right. ABS.
There's some MLB mandated positions that really they're part of the game day operations, but they're almost kind of in their separate little silo.
Yeah, I don't have to do anything with them. They're here when I know they're going to be here, and they're great to work with. Mm-hmm. I would say that 8 to 10 is where you want to start, and then build from there, man. I didn't have a big staff last year, and towards the end of the year, I lost some kids go back to college. So I was a very, you know, tight knit group. But I treated them like family. And I think that goes a long way. My group in this press box, man, it's my second family. So like anytime
you're spending a lot of time, anyone that it's one of the best parts of it, right? Like absolutely. If you've ever, like, again, I'm kind of the slight divide, but you mentioned the Macon Bacon. My first job in baseball was I was covering the Macon Braves, and I was covering 65 home games up in a little a press box that was attached to the roof of a ballpark in Luther Williams Field in Macon, built in 1931, I think, 33. Mm-hmm. And there was the music op, there was the PA announcer / official scorer, and usually one other person. And
that was it.
You were around those people so much that you had, like, you develop your own language with each other. Everyone, because you have a shared experience of we're going to experience this again tonight, as we did last night and the night before and the night before.
And cultivating that group only makes it easier, because then those guys start reaching out to communicate or connections, like, hey man, you need to come work here. Like, we have fun. I learn a lot. I'm getting more experience. So having that good family environment and, you know, having a good group of 8 to 10 is where I think you need to start or set your sights for.
The other thing I would say about this is that I would say two parts to this. Like, one is, if you're doing this, like if you're kind of trying to spin this up, understand that anyone with the desire to do this and a little bit of reliability can be brought up to a level of being useful to this. Like, it can be a 16-year-old, it can be an 82-year-old, like an anywhere in between. Because there are different roles where it's like, okay, this person may be great at that. They may not be as good at this or whatever, but you don't have the luxury of being like walking in and go, so have you, how much years of camera experience do you have?
Yeah, no, not at all.
They're walking in going, that sounds cool to me. Maybe I could do that.
Yeah. Prime example, my high home camera operator, he's locked this position down. His name's Eric Garfield. Came in last year and never worked a high home camera ever. So I started, you know, mixing him in on Sundays when, you know, it's a light crowd, maybe not a lot of people watching at 12 o'clock, you know, and learn, you know, you're going to run high home today. Listen to your TD, listen to what he wants for the shots, and just learn. In that time, you know, from then to now, he's my best high home camera operator. He's shooting all the games that you watch at home, that we catch all those great home run shots with. And he's been able to get another job with another team, helping them out on off weeks, doing the same kind of work. It's about developing, you know, your group.
That's the opportunity you have here too, is that this is also an opportunity. That's the other part. When I said there's the part is you're going to have to accept that enthusiasm and desire is enough to get, to say, okay, you're hired and let's get you started. But the second part of this is that within not a very long period of time, you have people who are doing a very difficult, a very complex,
hard job
that there aren't that many people in the world that can do. And by the way, this is the opportunity for the person is, you do this for a year, you really actually have the skills at that point to, if you wanted to, if you want that nomad, because there are people who bounce around the, you know, the country doing this, you know, for National Rocket
Freelance Center. Camera ops all the freelance time. I need them all the time.
And you can do that because you're getting the reps that there just aren't normally out there for you to get otherwise.
Yeah. And that's a big, you know, I hire a lot of, for my like technical side of things, I hire a lot of kids that are either right out of college looking for their first opportunity, that are hungry and may have a little bit of experience in our field, but a lot of drive to get into our field. And then, you know, every now and then you'll find a passionate older, you know, person that just wants to learn a game of baseball. And I promise you those guys will be your kind of your most dedicated workers. You know, I've hired a couple of those, you know, older gentlemen that just want to be a part of the game, and I can't keep them out of the press box now. Like, and they do their job so well. They take it so serious. So finding
I will tell you right now, one of my retirement plans I could very well see for me is to like get involved, because I love TV production. It's like,
yeah,
that would be the perfect way. It's like, I want to still be involved in it. Like, but I'm now, you know, like I don't want to do what I'm doing. Yeah, that would be a great way to do it.
Yeah, like, just hang out in the press box, man. Exactly. Yeah. And finding that good mix between the two groups, because then you never know who can become a mentor, right? You know, our public address announcer, Jeff Phillips, has been here for 10 years, and he's taken a lot of people under his wings and given them connections in this community here in Manatee County that they may have not had before, especially the younger group that I bring in, those college students that lead to bigger opportunities. So finding that strike and that balance between the two groups, that it builds a great staff. And I think that's the key to, you know, putting together a good product. Because if you like one another and you respect one another, it just makes the job easier, right? It just makes things a lot more fun as well. And that's what we're here to do. Put on fun, have fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now that like you're at a, you know, wherever you are, your broadcast now has cleared the bar of acceptable, right? You're now adding some bells and whistles, right? How does a team, and this is a little bit more of a process question. How does a team get better? Like from a standpoint of what can you do like individually, and what can a group, a broadcast team do as a group to raise their game over the course? And really, I would say over the course of a season, right? Ideally, your broadcast, again, you lose a little manpower a lot of times at the end of the season, mm-hmm. but your broadcast in mid-August should be better than your broadcast in April.
I think you're going to love my answer. Watch baseball.
That's the key. I will tell you right now, it is 100% the key. If you won't watch baseball,
you're not
outside of your work, you can't produce a quality baseball production. You can add bells and whistles on top of it, but if you don't have the visual language of a baseball broadcast in the marrow of your bones, you will always have an obstacle to producing a quality broadcast, in my opinion.
And we I know that was something. So we get very lucky. So we get five to seven games during spring training that S&P is not covering. That's like an off day, but it's a home game. So we get to cut cameras for like all the in-park TVs. It's really fun. And you get to work with the big leaguers those days. You know, before our first game, we had the World Baseball Classic starting. I think it was 2 weeks before we had a week before we had our first game on, you know, our own. I told my whole staff, I said, watch these games. Look how they cut cameras. Look how they tell stories. Cause that's the most poetic, you know, part of baseball right there. All these guys playing for their country, they're going to have storylines. They're going to present things in different ways than a normal Tuesday night broadcast on, you know, the Rangers Network might put out, or somebody whoever it is. Watch these big games and then mimic it, man. These guys are the best for a reason. So if you can get your product to look like the best, right?
And copy. Copy.
It's so Rob Saletti, the head of streaming, he's an amazing. He's done great work for minor league baseball.
This is the other thing I wanted to get into is that I will say it's so much easier to get better at it now than it was not that long ago. Because now there is much more of an emphasis on getting it better.
Yes. And that all credit to Rob, because he is over all of like the MILB, MLB streaming. And, you know, he implemented like a grading system for all teams this, I think it was last year or 2 years ago. But it basically takes in all considerations, graphics, camera shots, storytelling, how many cameras, anything. And it just gives you a broadcast grade. And with your broadcast grade, you get opportunities. So like if you get an A, like we were able to accomplish last season, you get an S&P opening and you can take your product. And if they want you there, Rob can approve it on the MILB side. The S&P guys approve it. And now you're on a bigger market audience watching you every night. But it's
a key point that if you haven't cleared a certain bar, mm-hmm. you can't be on the regional.
Yeah, you can't. You have to clear a certain bar. And
which is a smart way to do it. It should not be something where it's like, I mean, again, at the starting points of this, and I am not like I always said at the time, at the starting point of MILB TV, I won't signal out the team, but there was a team who had one non-telephoto high, I don't want to say high home, attached to the top of the stadium camera.
Bird's eye
view. So you had shots on the field. But you know what? That plus a radio broadcast on it still was better than not having it.
Still better than nothing. You could still.
And now we are to the point, though, where it's like you can watch multiple minor league teams who is like you guys and others, where it's like if you put that on the regional, you know, sports network, the RSN, it is not going to stand out as what am I watching? What, you know, like clearly the Pirates are not on. These are not the Pirates, but the quality of the broadcast is not going to
take
you out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And that, like I said, credit to Rob, because he's the one that kind of implemented that system. He's the one that is, you know, challenging everybody to raise the bar in minor league baseball. I was fascinated. So last, like I keep on going back to Indianapolis. I'll go back to two kind of things that drive me in this. So last year we went on a corporate partner trip to Pittsburgh. And we took a lot of our, you know, groups up. Me and my general manager are sitting in the local restaurant eating lunch. And I look up at the TV and I see Altoona on the TV for Sportsnet Pittsburgh. And it was kind of like the write it down on a napkin moment that the chef in Unreasonable Hospitality had, like, you know, put it down somewhere and do it. I looked at my GM and I told him, like, we're going to be on Sportsnet one day. I don't know how we're going to do it. We're going to figure it out. And then going to that with that thought, going to the minor league meetings in Indianapolis and listening to Rob and listening to, like, hey, this is how you get there. Those two moments is what inspired me to get this broadcast to where it's at. It's on the person that, you know, oversees it. If you're driven and you want to put out a good product, you will. I know it's hard, but you know, there's a lot of people out there that would kill to be in a lot of these chairs that we're in. And I think you owe it to the fans and you owe it to yourself to put your best foot forward because your product's being watched every night.
Okay. We're going to wrap it up here because we're almost going an hour
already. That's fine. I didn't want to take too much time, too.
What are the things, what are the mistakes? And I'll say this somewhat. What have you learned? Like, oh, I wish I'd have known that earlier on. What are mistakes that if you, again, I really do think that this is kind of a guide for like, hey, I've been given this new role. I want to do it right. Like, what are some things that you wish, it's like, okay, I wish I'd known that?
That's a hard
one. I have one while you're doing it, which is kind of you hit on it, which is like when it comes to people, if they have enthusiasm in that kind of role, to me, like you can absolutely work them. When it comes to equipment, that's where you need to over prepare.
Yes.
Because if you make a mistake on a piece of equipment,
it can
be living with that for a very long time. If you make a mistake and the person you thought has enthusiasm, not okay, you're on to the next one. But if your switcher is a bad, you made a bad purchase on your switcher. If you bought a bad center field camera, there's no easy way to get out of that, right?
Yeah, no, that's doing your homework on your equipment. That
and
is
talking to people who are already doing this. And like you said, like how you can learn, like, hey, you know, there's a sharing. People don't mind, like you're not in competition.
No.
People want to tell you this camera's great. This piece of tech is wonderful. This was terrible. I wish we'd never bought it. They'll tell you.
I think you just opened. That was my kind of biggest mistake coming into this role, right? I wanted to come in. I wanted to do things my way, this way, how we're going to do it. And, you know, not taking in, you know, this guy's been doing this for 25 years and he's really good at it. So maybe trying to talk to him might give you a little perspective on how to do your job better. Or talking to, you know, a team that, you know, may not have the funds that you have and seeing how they're doing it. So then you can take those smaller ways and tailor it to fit your way. I think communication was my biggest kind of mistake. You know, once you get in these positions, we're a family, man. And that's kind of that's a nod to Dominic Repper again up at Clearwater. He's a good colleague. And you know, we help each other out. If there's somebody down in the Florida State League that needs a question, they'll shoot an email. Like, we'll answer. Just talk to people. That would be my biggest mistake. I didn't talk to anybody until halfway through my first year.
I've got one other, and you can feel free to weigh in. You don't have to. If you're being told, hey, there is a way to do this with, again, not everyone's going to have cameras that are not human operated. That is a key part of a broadcast. But I will just say, I can tell you right now, if you are running a broadcast that is what is now kind of termed as kind of like AI basically directed, AI cameras finding the ball and all that, I will tell you right now, there is a ceiling of I am a below average broadcast and you cannot get past that. It's not your fault. It's not, but you just laid out at the start of this, okay, I have this camera. I've got this one going for that. I've got this one going for that. If I'm a director and I don't have the ability, if I'm looking for shots and I can't trust that it's going, like, I don't know why is it going that way? I don't know. There's only so much you can do at that point. Why is no camera on the ball? Oh, it thought that was the ball.
What do you do? Man, that is a real tough question. Cause like I'm totally against that. Cause I know some teams here in the Florida State League who kind of run the similar programs, and I don't want to say any names, but they don't like it because
I came from this from talking to people who've had to run it. And it's, again, I get it. If it's like, I can either do this because I've only got one person or two people or whatever, or I cannot do it. I get that. I'm not saying like there's no scenario for it, but I'm just saying there is a ceiling.
There's a limit. Absolutely.
And it's a frustration because, again, like there are workflow processes that we just laid out that you can't, like, if you're kicking out shots, if you're sending, you have to have someone that you're speaking into the mic and they're listening and going to get that shot. And if you can't be comfortable that that's always going to be, you know, that you can trust that person, it becomes tougher to the whole production becomes a lot tougher as I see it.
And it becomes difficult to work with, which just makes things not fun. And you want to have fun in this job because you're here.
You're trying every night to be like, you want to be when this over, it's like, man, we killed it tonight.
Yes. Every night. Because like last night I had that feeling and it's the best feeling ever. And there are some nights where I walk away and I'm like, oh man, what happened tonight? We got to get better tomorrow.
That's another useful thing to do is that it's like, if you have 70 broadcasts or you have 45 or whatever it is, you're going to have your A game some nights and some nights you're going to just, Some nights you're not going to have it. And the best you can do is go, okay, well, what was wrong tonight? And how do we get better from it? But it's not going to be something where you're going to kill it every night. Like, again, I'm an F1 fan. I will tell you right now, whoever did the Canadian Grand Prix as we record this, they didn't have their best night. They did not. And it's like, it's okay. Like, even at that level, which is a $1 billion, you know, industry, billions of, you know, like dollars, we're all human.
Yes.
But it's like, okay, can you build on it? Can you learn from it? Or again, it can't be something where you say, I know everything, I don't need to get better. Because if you do that, you're getting worse.
You're constant. Yeah. And this thing is always constantly changing and evolving. People, like, there's new tech, there's new things you got to stay on top of that make your broadcast better. And that's, like I said, you got to talk to people. You got to be in the community. You got to put your advice out there and you got to be able to take some advice. And that really helps.
Okay, that's the last question I'm going to ask with this is kind of a looking ahead thing. I do think, like we've seen, again, I would call it almost the democratization of this, right? Like, is that 20 years ago, without a massive spend, you could not put together a reasonably capable broadcast. Every piece of equipment that you needed to use, there was only a pro version of it. And that pro version was basically designed to be like, okay, you know, it was going to be a five-figure piece, right? Like every one of these pieces, right? And now, like, are we reaching the limit? Or, okay, I'll throw the crazy question out there. Are we 5-10 years away from, you know, like that some of the cameras, like, may be, like, I'm not saying that it does blow me away, though, that, like, I have on my person at all times a cell phone video camera that produces great much quality. Higher quality video than I could produce with the best cameras that we were going to be able to afford to buy at Baseball America 10 years ago.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
It does everything better. It does slow-mo better. It does light, low light better. It even actually zooms as well. Like all of these things. If you are trying to do this, like, again, especially if I'm saying, like, if I am a low level Division I team and I want us to have our baseball broadcast on ESPN Plus or something like that. Are we getting to the point where it's like, hey, the way I can get to a camera 4 is a rig with an iPhone Pro or whatever, where that becomes actually a reasonable option?
Yeah. So there's actually rigs here in the Florida State League that use like Sony, like these cameras right here, actually. Like, this is what I take mm-hmm. like community photos with or small event mm-hmm. photos.
A great sensor on it. And that's like, we can get up to a 1/1000th of yeah. a second, you know, FPS is on, you know, ours, RV4, I believe it is, you know, like, yeah.
I think so with this technology that I was talking about earlier, the DJI stuff, I could 100% see in 5 to 10 years being able to take this right here and throwing it into, a rig
where it will stabilize yeah. it. It'll, you know, a gimbal, like, you know, I mean,
absolutely. I can 100% because now, I mean, with the technology now as is, that DJI transmission set I haven't tested it yet, and I have to get some approvals around the league. But you should be able to take like a DJI drone shot and take that feed live from that drone to the transmitter, and it shoot into, you know, whatever production system you're using. So if capabilities are like that now, I 100% anticipate in 5 to 10 years that you'll definitely be able to use that. I'm sure if I did my homework, I probably could do it now.
I gotta be honest. Yeah. I don't want to like say it's doable without being able to see it, but I'm pretty confident that, like, if you have a good way of reliably getting, you know, like, okay, you probably would need some way of reliably getting it out, right? Like, it's got to be a USB-C to something that then, like you said, with the DJI, like something that gets it to you're not going to just say, okay, we're connecting this by the Wi-Fi in that, you know, in the stadium, but the sensor on the camera itself, I don't have any concern at this point.
I'm kind of thinking out loud here, because if you had a USB-C to an HDMI male, that would work on the DJI transmission. Way, just
like, I have 5 of those in my house.
I'm thinking that now I might have to try that out.
I mean, again, like, the thing that to me is that what we're doing, and this is where it's encouraging to me. This mm-hmm. is something, again, as someone who cares about these things and has for a long time. The barrier of quality, the gap. There used to be a time in doing this where I was talking to operators doing this, and it's like, I know what I want us to do, but we can't, like, it was financially impossible, right?
Yeah.
That barrier was a real one. It was something where it's like, I would talk to people, like, again, I think it was Quad Cities years ago. It's like, yes, eventually we're going to go HD, but they figured out a way to turn their 480 camera and have like onto a HD feed because they had a 480 camera, and until that next year, but they put graphics around it at all times where it's like, at least we're making the best. And this is years ago now, but we're making the best of a less than ideal situation. We're now hitting the point where it's like, I'm at 4 cameras. How do I get to another roamer? And it may be, it's like
a cell phone.
It good could news. It's a be. Cell phone. And at that point, now you're not going to be zooming in to, you know, to right field from the other, you know, from the third base side of the, you know, stands, but you're going to be able to get fan shots. You're going to be able to get a lot of stuff, and it's not going to,
not costing.
It's all becoming more possible than it used to be.
I can tell you right now that I probably, after we get off of this podcast, I'm going to run up to my DJI transmission set and see if I can get a camera feed through it. And if I do, I promise you I'll post it on Twitter.
Yeah, I want to see.
That's a great idea. But no, I anticipating 5 to 10 years. I mean, if it follows trends, it's gotten cheaper, it's gotten more accessible, and it's gotten easier to produce. That if the trend continues, which it should, I definitely foresee.
And I will say, someone's going to scream at me right now. Didn't you know that Apple did this with a MLS broadcast? And I'm like, yes, but did you know that they put their camera behind a $200,000 lens? Like, okay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, right? Like, yeah. The problem with all of these is you have focal length, right? Like, mm-hmm. you have to have a way to get this to the point of actually.
There are attachments, I think, out there.
Yeah. They used a full rig. Now, wow. The sensor on phones now is great, but they use that to get them the pull, the zoom that they needed. And that's good. That's not a knock, but I'm saying,
no, that's amazing.
A different thing, but that's a very different thing than, you know, Apple having the money to do that than incorporating this into a minor league broadcast. Like, you know, like, yeah, exactly. But I think this has been a blast. Again, I really do appreciate it, Brian. Again, if you haven't, check out a Bradenton broadcast, because I promise you, you're going to come away going, ooh, that's like, you know, and it is. It really is. It's, again, the key things I'll say is the things that jumped out right away. You hit on them, but I'll brag on you guys, which is sharp center field, perfect location camera, multiple other cameras that allows you to tell the story. And again, there's a limit to how much story you can tell with your limit on your cameras. You make it, you fit it to what you can, but when you are telling a story, having extra cameras, you can tell that difference. Where the other thing I'll say that we didn't get to really tie into, but I felt like you guys also did a good job of understanding where the broadcast is going. Cause that's also something that can be difficult, is having it be a very collaborative effort, where when the broadcast goes somewhere, that the visuals go with the audio and vice versa, not the audio is going off in one direction and the visuals are going off in another. Having all of that tied together, it really is. It's worth checking out. But thank you.
I really appreciate that. And I will share these kind words to my team. You know, they work hard, and I would be nothing without them. You know, they come
one can do this. I don't care how good you are. That's the other part of this is like, if you're doing this well, there is a team component to this. You cannot do this. There's no way to do this individually.
Absolutely. And I have to thank my, you know, my TD, Chikari Patterson, and, you know, my broadcaster, Matthew Hargo. Those two guys, you know, daily are helping me put this great show together that we do for the fans. It's not for us. It's for the minor league fans that, you know, are bored on a Tuesday night that want to watch a great broadcast. And I thank you, JJ. This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate, you know, your support. It really means a lot, especially down here in the Florida State League.
Again, I will say right now, that used to be, there was a time in MILB TV that was kind of, that and the Cal League were kind of like the black holes, where it's like when players got out of there, that's when you started to get to see them. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and now, again, it's great to see that it's like, I mean, again, Seth Fernandez makes his debut in Bradenton, and we're like, I'll tell you right now, like, I mean, I know, like, again, and hey, this is the bar for everyone else, but like, I won't be able to better watch what his pitches look like. Someone else may get equal. Nothing is Greensboro, but it's not there. Green has not there yet, but like, maybe Altoona, maybe Indianapolis. But what I'm saying to this is, but it won't be better, because you guys, I want to shout out West Michigan, the West Michigan Whitecaps, for years have had a gold standard, like, center field camera, you know, angle with a cam. And again, I will emphasize, with a camera that makes it work too. Like, there are, when you see it, it jumps out, as opposed to, like, again, I'm not knocking anybody, but you also have others where it's like, if you can't color balance your center field camera to match the same color scheme of the rest of the broadcast, again, the visual language, it's going to cause a problem. If you can't open it up to that, it looks the same, like it's, if it looks like it's 9 p.m. on your center field camera and it looks like it's 5 in the afternoon on your other cameras, it's going to cause a derailing moment for the viewer. All those things where it's like, again, there are challenges everyone has to face, but those are the parts where it's like, wow, they're putting that little extra attention to it. And again, I love talking about this stuff. That was the how to put together a quality baseball broadcast with Brian Spradlin. I'm JJ Cooper. Thank you for the view. Thank you for the listen. And if you have comments, you know, feel free. I think I'll try to send some to Brian if you have on YouTube also, if Absolutely. I can answer them. But, you know, but again, we do appreciate it. Thank you all. And see you on the next Baseball America podcast.